Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor, as well as a board-certified music therapist, and I am your host. Today's episode is so much fun and has so much great information in it. I had such a blast talking with our guest. This week, our guest is Dr. Denise Thomas, and she shares with us so many different things about play therapy and expressive therapies across the lifespan, which is one of the most beautiful things I think I love about this episode, is not just talking about how expressive and play therapies can be used with children, but how we can use those for anybody at any age. And so Dr. Denise Thomas, she is a professor in mental health counseling and play therapy. She is the past faculty director of the Center for Play Therapy and Expressive Arts. She hosts two podcasts, Play Therapy Across the Lifespan, which is amazing and one of my favorite podcasts. And she also hosts Wellness with Dr. Denise. She's the author of Creative Play Therapy with Adolescents and Adults, Moving from Helping to Healing, Wellness That Works, How to Create a Wellness Plan, Overcoming Challenges, Making Your Wellness Plan Work, and Reaching Resilience, The Experience of Resilience and Protective Factors in Adult Children of Divorce, along with a cookbook and 20 academic journal and magazine articles. She is amazing in what she shares with us. We talk about her book and her podcast and just dive into really deep topics as well as really fun topics. So dive in, enjoy this episode, and I'll talk with you on the other side. All right, Denise, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. I'm pumped to have you here. I feel like I have 6 or 7 questions, but I probably have like 35 that I want to ask you, but
well, ask away.
Absolutely. Well, can you tell for our listeners, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do as a professional and a little bit about you as a person?
Sure. So I started my counseling career many years ago as an elementary school counselor. So that was kind of my beginning and just working with kids. I was always looking for something to be more effective. So I'd been trained in, you know, traditional talk therapy, but that didn't work so well, especially with my preschool age kids. And so that's what really got me interested in creative counseling, play therapy, and then moving into expressive arts. So I did that for a few years. I worked preschool through high school, and I worked at both public and private schools, but I've been a professor now for the last maybe about 12 years. So I love play therapy and expressive arts, and that influences how I teach, how I supervise, how I do therapy. I think that the more that I do it, the more it just becomes part of how I practice, and it's just to be consistent, it just kind of permeates all of it. So I've got a couple of podcasts. I've written a few books, and they're on my passion projects, one of which is play therapy and the other one is on wellness. And then my early work was in resilience. And so I think that has always been a theme through everything that I do, is I'm so fascinated with the idea that we can encounter adversity and actually be strengthened by it, which is the definition of resilience. And so I just love to explore that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's like tugging on my heartstrings so much. Resilience of just that, you know, the positive psychology kind of piece of that, of creative resiliency is always just something I'm fascinated by, of like how creativity, expression in itself can like build us up and, you know, be one of those things that can help us navigate through adverse things and help us move through stuff. It's fascinating.
Yeah, not just navigate through it, but to actually be strengthened by it, to become, to come out in some ways better. And it doesn't mean that the adversity is not hard, and it doesn't mean that you don't wish that it hadn't happened, but it does mean that there's kind of a gratitude in how it's grown and developed you. And when I can watch that with clients, I can watch that process happen. It's what makes the work that I do so meaningful.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. That there is like a hidden gem in those experiences of like, well, I wouldn't have this if I didn't go through this and come out on the other side. There was something in there that I can take from it. And it's a beautiful thing to have, even though it's a really mm-hmm. difficult and, you know, can be very painful processes, yeah. but there's a gem sometimes in there that we can grasp from it.
Yeah. Really hard won wisdom that comes from it.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Well, you mentioned your, a couple podcasts and books and, on your podcast, I'm a huge fan of your podcast, Play Therapy Across the Lifespan.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so, so wonderful. I was just listening to it earlier, the one on themes, the season on themes, which is so, so fun. But you also, you dive into so many topics on that podcast. And you have a series dedicated to the expressive arts in play therapy, like you had mentioned too. Can you explain to us a little bit about what that looks like, of how expressive arts within play therapy, how they kind of go together, and maybe give us some examples of the different artistic mediums within that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So this summer is going to be the sixth season of the podcast. And sadly, it's actually my farewell season as well. Mm-hmm. But season two, I think, is the one that you're referring to. And it is dedicated to exploring the expressive arts. And so there's seven different episodes that explore each of the seven expressive arts. And so in one episode, we cover art. In one, we cover movement and dance and drama and expressive writing. Let's see, music. Photography, and then using sand in therapy. And so each of those expressive arts, the way that I do it is very much through the lens of play therapy. So I am not a credentialed art therapist or music therapist or any of these others, but I pull from the techniques of them and I do it through that play therapy lens. It's kind of the way that I approach it. And so the expressive arts in a lot of ways become the toys that we use. And it allows clients to use like both parts of their brain to come to a place of healing. And so you know, I mentioned earlier that I was trained in traditional talk therapy. And so I learned how to ask questions well, to really work on those open-ended questions. And as I advanced in my skills, I became a little better at reflection. But all of that requires verbal ability and a cognitive capacity to be able to articulate and formulate thoughts and ideas around experiences. And sometimes that can work really well, but sometimes it doesn't. And when we're talking about things like trauma and really just big emotions, difficult emotions, it's really hard to wrap words around them. And so what I love about the expressive arts is it gives us a language that doesn't rely on words. So it pulls us over into that right brain side where we can experience it again in an environment of safety, process it and work through it. And then in the way that I do it, we kind of move back to the left brain and then we will wrap words around it and do a verbal processing. And so you get both sides of the brain involved. And by going back and forth, there's actually a physical healing that happens in the brain as the client is experiencing emotional healing. And for me, that's really, really exciting because I say often, I didn't get into this work to put band-aids on wounds. I came into this work because I wanted to do healing work. I want to get in and I want to do the really deep, really hard work, but I want it to be worthwhile. I want the client to experience a transformation through that work.
Yes. Oh, that's such a beautiful saying of that, you know, not to put band-aids on wounds, but to mm-hmm. actually, you know, be a part of that healing process. Mm-hmm. What you said with the back and forth, that I think that's fascinating to hear about how, you know, in expressive work, creative arts, we're kind of always in that one other side of the brain and what we're doing and expressing. Can you kind of paint a picture of what that might look like in a session of if you're hanging out doing the expressive piece, but then you kind of bring it back to the left side and then what that process might look like in a session?
Yeah, absolutely. So I first heard that concept from Dr. Linda Hohmeyer, who has written and teaches on sand tray therapy. And the idea is that like as you are going back and forth across the hemispheres of the brain, you're actually creating new neural pathways across the corpus callosum. And so that's kind of what is happening there. And the way that I conceptualize how this works is it is through this really interesting therapeutic process. And so, you know, you begin when you're working with a client with this warm-up phase where you're building rapport and you're building trust and you're building safety and you're building an environment that can hold the therapeutic work that you are doing. And that's absolutely essential. It's got to be the first phase and it's got to be done really well because the rest of it can't really happen at any level of depth if there's not that safety and that healthy rapport. The next stage then is what I call the creation stage. And so in that stage, whether it's music like you do or sand or any of these other expressive arts, there's something that is created. And what that creation is doing is it's basically taking what is happening internally and it's putting it in some sort of an external form that you as the clinician can see and the client can see it. And so you get this like third person perspective of the creation and then you can work on it and you can make changes in it. And as the client is able to make changes in that creation, then that often reflects what is happening internally. So the internal change that's happening. And then what follows that, at least in my work, what I've observed is when you're really doing that deep work, there's often a pretty intense emotional expression that happens. And sometimes it's tears, sometimes it's anger, sometimes it's a foul language, anything just that it's an expression. It's just expressing those big emotions that, again, aren't always easily described with words. And then with some clients, I have found there's also a somatic expression that happens. Not with all clients, but some clients seem to be really prone to that, where there is like physical, very strong physical sensations that go along with the work. So they might get really fidgety and need to move. They might I've had some have upset stomachs or kind of develop a headache or things like that. As again, that intense emotion is coming out. It's coming out of your body. And so there's that somatic side. And then from that, we move into meaning making. And I find this stage, especially with adolescents and adults, happens because adolescents and adults want to make sense of things. With children, the meaning making may or may not happen because they are experiencing it and they're processing it differently and at a different cognitive level. But with adolescents and adults, there's kind of that desire to understand what that creation was, what the things meant, how it goes together, and what it means going forward. And then that leads into that healing phase. And often it's kind of like almost there's a physical relief, especially when it's really intense. And then what you may do with a client is you may cycle through that multiple times over the course of therapy. You're kind of always working on rapport, but maybe next session you'll do a different type of creation and you'll do that. And you'll kind of circle around that until the therapeutic work, or at least this part of the therapeutic work, is done. And that's when you move to your ending.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That whole description of like what that process looks like. And then mm-hmm. that piece you said too about meaning making of, you know, that may or may not happen with younger kids, but that's such an important part for adolescents and adults too, mm-hmm. that something, it's almost a tangible thing to come away with and process with of why, or what does this mean? Or how does this relate to my values? Or, you know, mm-hmm. having that within an expression to walk away with feels like such a complete cycle. Absolutely. Of that expressive part, and that being that kind of left part where it goes over there for that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would argue that children do that too. It just is different. And often we don't get to see that because they're not processing it verbally like adolescents and adults do.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like, is that process happening kind of more internally mm-hmm. for them, and that, you know, it sounds like it's more like we're trusting that process is happening with them.
Yeah. And I think we see it demonstrated. So with play therapy, you'll see their play change as they're starting to make sense of it. And so it's that happens. It just doesn't necessarily happen with, oh, that's what that meant. Like adults might do.
Right. The light bulb moments.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes. I think that's really exciting when the exciting part about working with kids is that when you see that progress through expression and how it's different and, you know, even reflecting on that and looking back and seeing where they were when it started and how much it has progressed and has changed, or if themes don't come up anymore or they seem complete and there's a new theme. And, you know, it's really fascinating to see that change and progress. Mm-hmm.
And it's so rewarding too. Like as clinicians, I think that's what makes it really meaningful for us is when we can watch and we can actually, I think it's why I like the idea of a process of therapy and kind of being really familiar with what those stages are, is because I can watch clients progress through those. And I know that we're making progress that way. Whereas like at the beginning of my career, when I didn't have a firm grasp of that, sometimes I felt like I was floundering. Like, I don't really know what we're doing. And how do I know if they've really progressed, or have they progressed enough? And so that gives me some more concrete ways to assess how things are going.
Yeah, you have like, it's like mile markers, mm-hmm. you know, of like, okay, I know where I am. It can help, I think, as a therapist feel grounded mm-hmm. in that, like just grasping at straws, or just that like case conceptualization in a way of like, okay, this is where we are, this is what's next, and how we could kind of move forward through it.
Yeah. And I really like that word grounding, because I think that as the clinician, as the therapist, when I am grounded in it, when I'm confident because I know what's going on, that when it is difficult for the client, like during that emotional expression or whatever, I know that we are about to bump up against a breakthrough. And so for me, like I get really excited and I'm like, okay, here it comes, you know, and I can be confident in how that's going to go. Whereas for the client, that is terrifying, you know, that it feels really out of control and it feels like maybe too much. And I'm not talking about getting dysregulated, but just intense emotions. Mm-hmm. And when they are in that place, if I can be really grounded in knowing what's going to happen next, or having a sense of how it typically progresses, mm-hmm. it gives me the capacity to really hold that pain for them in a way that gives them the confidence to step into it, because it's hard. It's really hard work.
Yes. And so brave, the mm-hmm. bravery, the courage that it takes to go in that. And thankfully with creating a foundation of safety, like mm-hmm. that feels more doable, but it takes so much to go into that for, especially for kids.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And for all of us, I think those big emotions, we're often told they're not okay. Mm-hmm. And so to share those with another person, you're right. Bravery is just a good word for that. It's very courageous for clients to step into that.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Oh, I love that with that process. Mm-hmm. How important for us to have that in the back of our mind through our work so that we can help in the moment and long-term when we're writing our notes, even, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Helps with that. Yeah. Helps with that conceptualization that you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So you've touched on this actually a couple times throughout this as we were talking, that you're not just passionate about play therapy for kids, but mm-hmm. also for teens and adults. Mm-hmm. What does play therapy look like, or how is it different when, let's start with teens? What does it kind of look like, or how is it different when you're working with teens versus children?
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it's really similar. And by that, I mean, I'm grounded in the same theoretical approach. I am very client-centered in the way that I do my work. And I conceptualize the work pretty similarly. I believe that clients have that growth potential, very Carl Rogers. I trust that there's incredible work that is happening. I've become comfortable with the intensity of it. It's client-led. And so in that way, in those ways, it's really similar whether I'm working with a child or a teen or an adult, that there's still that same process. I really believe that the client is in there and that they are going to do the work that they need to do and that they're ready to do. And I trust them with that. But it's also really different. So while children may be up and moving around the room, teens and adults tend to be much more stationary. They usually stay in their chairs unless I suggest to them that they can get up and go get the supplies or something like that. We kind of follow those more social norms of, you know, this is what you do in therapy. You sit in a chair and you talk. There tends to be, as I mentioned earlier, a lot more verbal processing that happens after the creation. Whereas with children, they don't have that need to do that verbal understanding part. Sometimes with adults, there's also more questioning that happens. Adults and teens may be more cautious starting. So teens, of course, just by nature of where they are developmentally, they're very concerned about what other people think of them. And so they're concerned about what you as their therapist are thinking of them. And so they don't want to do it wrong. And for a lot of us, that follows us into adulthood, right? We tend to be perfectionists. And so we want to make sure we're following the rules, but we don't know what the rules are. Whereas some children may be more wired like that, but some children will just kind of jump in and not have that need to ask permission. So that's a pretty significant way that it looks different.
Yes, absolutely. And that it's interesting. I work with adults, teens, and kids, and how even just starting, or often I'll feel like teens or adults will be like, oh, I'm not quite sure about that thing yet. Or, you know, I maybe 3-4 sessions in, and then they're like, okay, I think I'm ready to kind of explore that. But kids so often just come in and beeline it for the thing that they want.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Ooh, you have that? Wonderful. I want to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Occasionally there are those that are really cautious. You know, I often tell the story. I have 3 kids and they're 3 really different kids. And one of my children, we jokingly call the police officer because he's always got to know what the law is and he's got to hold the law up. And so he would be the one that, you know, if he were to walk into a playroom, he would very cautiously be assessing everything that's there. He would be trying to understand the culture of the playroom, and he would, he would ask permission before he touched anything. Because he would, you know, want to know that it was okay. Well, he has a twin, and his twin brother is just the opposite. Like, he would walk in and just assume he owned the place, and he would immediately start interacting with toys. And, you know, he would just assume that you put all those toys there just for him. And, you know, and so there wouldn't be any sense of that kind of following the rules or anything like that. And so, you know, we just understand that about our clients too, is that they're wired a little bit differently. So we, again, I'm client led. And so I let them kind of assess the situation in whatever way they need to, and then interact in the way that's comfortable for them.
Yes. In letting them lead that of like, and I think like you mentioned before, there's so much trust in that process too. And I'm curious if this happens too for you of like, especially when you're in a client led situation, and I know people have written in about this too, but there's trust in that the client will kind of lead to where they need to go and what they need to work through. But when if a child or a teen or an adult comes in with like a very specific problem of maybe something like a phobia or OCD or something that's very, very specific, how do you go about sharing that with adults or with the parents of, you know, like, this is client led, but we'll kind of get there? What does that process look like?
So I think it comes from having some professional language to put around it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of my former students had this really great Instagram post, which went something like, what happened in session, played the floor is lava. And then, what I put in my case notes, and it was, you know, we worked on, assertiveness skills and, you know, that kind of thing. And it's really all in kind of how you couch the language around it. As professionals, we know that this work is therapeutic. We know that it's not just playing with Legos or playing on an instrument or, you know, playing in the sand, that the work actually has meaning. And so when I talk to adults, I like to do that. And you mentioned the season that was on themes. That's often a way that I like to describe what is happening with adults, so that adults understand that this is therapeutic work. It's not just play, which is might be what they hear from their child when they go home. But at the same time, you know, that I can also explain how we're progressing and how it's going, and give a bit of confidentiality to the way that the client is playing, because I feel like that's a really important part of it as well. I want to keep parents informed. I'm a parent. I would want to know what my children were doing. And so I'm certainly understanding of that aspect, but I also think that within the session that the child needs to know that whatever they need to express is safe in that environment, even if it might show a parent or other person in a negative light.
Mm-hmm. That space is like truly safe. It's safe to explore all of those things. And that feels like that's where that non-judgmental, you know, unconditional positive regard stuff is coming in, of like everything is safe to share and explore here.
Yeah, most definitely. And you know, you were asking about the difference with teens. I mentioned that my theory is the same, and that is an essential part of it as well, is creating those three core conditions. So that empathy, that genuineness, that unconditional positive regard, that expressing that belief to clients that I believe that they can grow, that they can heal from this, because sometimes clients need me to do that before they can do that. And just that safety and being trustworthy as the clinician, all of that is just so essential.
Yes. Yeah. It feels like just the foundation of, if that's not there, it's a house of cards in where it could go and land. And, you know, nobody wants to explore if your foundation is really wobbly.
Yeah. Well, and it could be dangerous. You know, some of our clients come in and they have experienced what an untrustworthy person can do. And so if we can't be trustworthy, they can't do that work, nor should they with us, because they can't trust us.
Yeah, it's absolutely essential. And I think actually there was one of your episodes, it's like coming to my mind now too, where it might have been one of the theme ones, in that the safety is one of those themes that you kind of are always revisiting and always making sure that safety and that, you know, that kind of that trust is there. And it's not something to like only think about in the first three sessions of rapport building, but it's always a part of what we're doing.
It's always there. Yeah. And, you know, like, again, when you're expressing big emotions to another human being, you need to know that they can handle that. And if there's any doubt that that other person can handle that, then for some clients, they will pull back and they won't go there, because they will be taking care of you, because maybe they're a caretaker in other relationships and that's a comfortable place. But that's not a healing role for them in session.
Yes, yes. And so does it feel like that too, even with adults, that coming back to that safety and, you know, and with that exploring or checking back in, even if it's more maybe in a verbal way or in that kind of switching way, that feels like it's an important part there as well.
Yeah, it's critically essential, I think. And you're right, it's ongoing. And so at any point, if I start to get any, you know, nonverbal cues or just an intuitive sense that the client maybe is having trouble trusting me, or maybe not even it may not even be about me. It may just be trusting another person at all. You know, we've probably all had clients that we're the first person they've ever told this thing. And so it's big and it's heavy and it's weighty. And so at any point, if I start to sense any of that, then that's when I want to be really quick to come in and make sure that I'm establishing safety. And maybe that's through words, but usually it's much deeper than that. It has to be through my presence. Often through my voice, I'll get softer in my voice, because softer feels a little bit safer. You know, or I may, with adults, a lot of times I'll just ask directly. I tend to be pretty direct in my questioning when I do it. And so I might say, so it seems like as we started to talk about this, that I could feel a little bit of resistance with you. Can you tell me a little bit about why that's hard to talk about? And so what I like to do in those cases, when there's a little bit of resistance, or a lot of resistance, is process what's happening in the here and now, not whatever it is that they're resisting, because it's usually safe enough to talk about, well, right now I feel really anxious. Okay, so you're feeling anxious, and what is that like? And kind of exploring that versus I'm anxious about this event that happened, or, you know, the series of events.
Yes. Like that. I always think it's like the meta thing that like exactly. we can get too caught up in like, oh, the sand tray or whatever thing. But it's like, oh, no, wait, there's this other thing that's happening like right before it on top of it.
Yeah. And honestly, the sand tray doesn't matter. It's just a means to the end. Yes. You know, it's just the approach that gets us to that place of healing. And so if that becomes problematic in any way, or if it's just scary, you know, some clients, it's not that it's problematic. It's just that they're afraid that if they get in there, it's going to get pretty deep and pretty scary and pretty hard. And so then we'll pull back from that because it doesn't matter. And we'll talk about what's going on right now. And then often that helps, as we were talking about safety, that kind of cultivates that safety of, okay, I can trust you, the therapist, with this. And I can trust that you will know when I'm getting in over my head. Because a lot of clients need to know that. And if I see that, that's part of my role in facilitating this work, is that I pull them back if they're not able to do that. If a client's becoming dysregulated, we're going to become more grounded in the present and be aware. Use your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 technique.
Yes.
Those kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. That I feel like that paints just such a beautiful picture of that trust of like when somebody else can literally feel, see, they know you so well, or they're holding that space so well that they feel and know when you've got something comes up, anxiety, frustration, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, wait a second, what's going on right now? Like, forget this other thing. But that connection feels so mm-hmm. powerful when like you can feel that on the other mm-hmm. side too, of just like, okay, that trust is immediately there.
You can be seen and heard.
Yes, validated.
And for some people, that may be the only time they feel seen and heard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for those of your listeners that may be more beginning clinicians, that may sound really scary. Like, how in the world do I know that? How do I become so in tune with a client to do that? Mm-hmm. And what I would say is, again, you take your cues from the client. A lot of times I don't know what is going on with the client. I'm just picking up that there's something that I'm calling resistance. There's something that's kind of pushing back against the work. And so I don't have to know. I'm not a detective. That part isn't my job. My job is just to walk the client through the process. It's their work and they know what's going on at some level. And because I trust that, I can just trust that I can ask them and say, you know, so what's going on with you right now? And maybe we process that with somatic expression. So maybe if they're having trouble with the emotional vocabulary, I just say, what's going on with your body right now? Okay, well, your stomach's clenching as an example. Well, what does stomach clenching, what does that feel like? And as they describe it to me, it often helps me to understand what the emotion is that's behind that. Or at some point it helps them to understand it.
Yes. Yes. I love that emphasis on like, it's not about having the answers. Like it's just about us saying, I feel like the one that I always, it's like one of my go-tos is like, I wonder what's happening right now. Like I noticed, or I wonder, I don't know, you know, but I'm just noticing and I'm wondering, which feels so like you don't have to have the answer, you know, it's just like, hey, this is something, let's pay attention to this and dive into it.
And I think it's freeing as the therapist to not have all that expectation of having all the answers. Mm-hmm. Once I kind of embraced that and went, you know what? I don't know it all. And that's really okay. I actually was better in my work because I could let the client be the expert on themselves, which is honestly for most is more therapeutic than for me just to give them the answers.
Yes. Yes. Oh, for sure. Even the clients who are like, just tell me.
Right. Right. And I love I wonder statements. So I'm wondering why you need me to have your answers.
I'm noticing you ask me that a lot.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that. Yes. Well, with talking about this too, I love how we've had kind of all this visualization of what this looks like with kids and with teens and with adults. You have a book, and you mentioned this too on the front end, called Creative Play Therapy for Adults, for Adolescents and Adults. What would readers expect in kind of going through this book, or what kind of therapists would benefit from getting this kind of a resource?
Yes. So I really wrote this book kind of as an outpouring of my teaching, that I wanted to put all the things that I teach in a book form, because I often get lots and lots of questions. And so my approach to this was, if we sat down for coffee and you ask me about play therapy, this is what I'd want to tell you about what it's like across the lifespan. And so that's really the approach of the book. And so chapter two is all about what we're talking about today. It's really, I explain how expressive arts help us to externalize internal emotions. I list supplies for each of the expressive arts, and it just kind of walks through those. And my hope in that isn't that people become proficient in seven different expressive arts, but that you pick one or two, or maybe at the most three, that you really like, and you kind of have those as tools in your toolbox. And so when you're working with a client, and I'm again client led, and they are processing something, I already have a way to process that. So if it's an emotion word, if you're feeling angry, well, show me what anger looks like, and then we might pull out the art supplies. If they are processing a difficult relationship, then again, I love show me type of directives if I use them, and so it might be just like, show me what that relationship is like. And any of those, it doesn't matter really what the expressive art is. They're all means to helping us to both understand the experience of that better. And so that's really what it's about. Part two goes through my conceptualization of how the therapeutic process works. And so that's the seven stages that I already outlined: the warm up, the creation, the emotional expression, somatic expression, meaning making, healing, and then the ending of the relationship. And then the third part is just a few chapters on some specific issues like resistance and spirituality and doing that. And so that's really kind of what the book is about. I think personally, it would be great for most clinicians, but specifically those who really want to use more creative approaches in their work. Those who are a little more comfortable exploring things that may or may not be dependent on words.
Yes. And so, I think, like, I agree, and I'm probably biased because I like creative stuff.
Yes, me too.
I feel like that, you know, the chances that you're going to have someone come in your door that, you know, child, adolescent, adult, whoever, that could benefit so much from having like one of those tools in your mm-hmm. toolbox. Even like you said, if it's just like you might have some extra art supplies, you know, of mm-hmm. doing an art check-in or, you know, some kind of thing that could just open that door or be that tool in your toolbox. What a beautiful thing for any therapist to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would encourage people, if they're just starting out, just to experiment and just see. That's really how I got started. Is I was a school counselor, and in my office, I always had printer paper and always had markers and crayons. And so that's what I began with. And I just started with simple things like, well, show me your family, or show me what it's like to be in so-and-so's class, or, you know, those kinds of things. And what I discovered very quickly was that, first of all, it was often easier for the children to show me through that means than to try to tell me. I also found that I got a lot richer information, because all of a sudden I started to really see dynamically what was happening that, again, I didn't get with just words. And so, you know, whether it's just that or whether you mix that with words, it's just a much richer way to communicate.
Yes, I love that, how you explain that so well, of that we get so much more information or richer information. Because mm-hmm. I think of if someone was asking me a general question, like, tell me about your family, I would give a, you know, 2-3-4 sentence explanation, mm-hmm. and then someone could ask me a million questions. Mm-hmm. But if you said, show me, and then you can look at the space between people, and you mm-hmm. can look at what, you know, oh, if someone is represented as different animals or different things, and there's so much information in a visual expression or some other creative expression that you can kind of like, oh, this is an interesting thing to maybe dig mm-hmm. into, or like, I'm seeing something, I wonder what this is.
Yeah.
There's so much information there.
And it helps you to be more specific in those follow-up questions because you have more information. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's helpful. And another thing that I've observed is that, especially with some of the maybe like young adult or adult clients, is that they have become really proficient at talking around problems without really getting to them. And so by using some sort of an expressive technique, it cuts through that. All of a sudden the big vocabulary or, the deflecting questions and all that, like those things that they're pretty proficient in and that honestly have probably served a really good purpose for them, but they're not helpful in therapy. Like they don't have that anymore. And so we're able to, kind of process things a lot deeper and a lot more real.
Yeah, you can't avoid some of those things. Or, I mean, I had said this in a different episode where I was doing a sand tray thing in a supervision and had you know, completed the prompt. And then my supervisor asked me this question of like, oh, well, I'm noticing this and you forgot this. And it was like, oh my God. Like I would have never, you know, in talking about it, mm-hmm. I could have been evasive or, you know, kind of worked around that. But it was mm-hmm. like, it almost is not even in your, you can't even like conceptualize it when you're kind of putting it on paper or something. You're not thinking about it that way.
Yeah. Which again is the beauty of externalizing it is that you then also got to see what you omitted. And, yeah. And so you probably didn't think about it at all when you were creating this entree. I mean, nope. And that's the beauty of it. Again, with words, you know, you might omit that just because you're omitting it, you know, that you didn't think to include it. You can't include everything. Yes. But when you do, some sort of a representation of it, all of a sudden it becomes evident, you know?
Yeah. It's like you're mm-hmm. Like you're almost off your game a little bit. Like mm-hmm. we spend so much time talking and, you know, people asking those questions that we can get really good at it. But then when you're like, draw it, it's like, oh, okay, this is new. Let me do that.
Absolutely. Yes. Which is what makes this work so much fun.
I know.
I love it.
Me too.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. Well, as we're wrapping up, I wonder if there is, we mentioned your podcast as well as your book, which are amazing resources. And those will be linked in our show notes for listeners too, to just hop over and get to those. But do you have any other favorite resources that you have loved throughout your time that are like go-to books on your shelves or, you know, your favorite podcast to listen to that have helped you as a clinician?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple books that I always like to start with, especially for beginners, are Gary Landreth's Art of the Relationship. It's a wonderful introduction to play therapy and kind of how to do it. And then there's a really old book in the late 60s written by Virginia Axline called Dibs in Search of Self. And that one is just such a great case study that almost reads like a novel about her working with this young boy. And I think it gives a really good example of how, you know, I know the first time I read it, like the words that I was reading and what I was actually witnessing happening weren't exactly the same. And so there was a bit of confusion there for me of like, how do you just kind of repeat what he's saying and get there? And yet there's an art to what's happening. There's a skill that's happening there. So those are two really good introductory books that I like. Podcasts, I mean, you have a great podcast with some really good practical things. And I love how you often explain the why behind what you're doing, because again, the technique doesn't matter. It's the reason that you're using it. And so I think you offer lots of good practical things. Obviously a fan of practical, really easy to use kinds of things. Same. There. I'm a teacher. So that one's helpful. Another one of my favorite podcasts is called Play in the Everyday. It is put out by the University of North Texas. And what I like about it is it's kind of like sitting at a round table with a bunch of professionals who are discussing popular culture topics through the lens of play therapy. And so like one season they did Disney movies and they talked about the Disney movies through the lens of play therapy. And I love kind of that intellectual discourse around something that, you know, we commonly do. So they did children's books one season, TV shows one season, all, you know, just different kinds of things. And I'm not sure if that one's still ongoing or not, but it's a really, really good one. It's a fun one. And then I think my best place to learn is from my clients and my students now, and my supervisees. And I would just, you know, you experiment, you try things, you kind of see how it works for you. Some things work really well for other people, but not for me. And so you kind of learn your own style and preferences and, how you relate well with your clients. And then you can, you observe them and you can also ask them. And so it's not uncommon for me to ask for feedback. So now that you've done that, like, what was that like for you? And you know, what seemed to really work about that for you? And then that helps me to learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Number one, clients, students of, and yeah. I think too, to tie back to what you said about like us having to be grounded, I think that for us to learn and to be in that space to like learn and grow, we have to be grounded. Otherwise, mm-hmm. like there's almost no space for us to learn too in mm-hmm. those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a lifelong learner. And so like that again is a fun part of the work that I do. Like that is where I get really jazzed, like, oh, I learned something new,
yeah.
you know, and that too comes from that spirit of, I don't have to have all the answers already,
yeah.
you know, that I get to learn and I get to be better next year and I get to know a little bit more and I get to try new things because, you know, I don't want to be static and just doing, relying on the old stuff.
Yes. You get to always learn, which is just mm-hmm. so exciting.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I agree.
I love that. Well, for our listeners too, who, if they want to reach out to you, if they want to follow you or get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So I have a website that is my name, denisethomas.com, but my name does not have an E at the end. Thank you, parents. So it's spelled like the Europeans spell Dennis. So it's DENISTHOMAS.com. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook by searching for that as well. The two podcasts that I have, the first one is Play Therapy Across the Lifespan, which is the one we've been talking about today. At the beginning of the year, I started a new podcast on my other passion project, which is Wellness with Counselors. And so that podcast is Wellness with Dr. Denise. Again, awesome. Denise does not have an E.
Awesome. I will make sure to link to all of that, your website, Instagram, and both of those podcasts too, so people can go in and click them. And the wellness one sounds awesome too. I'm excited to dig into because that's, we all need it.
Well,
as therapists,
you know,
we need it.
It really stems out of this kind of work, is because if you're mm-hmm. going to do this kind of intensive work, this healing work with clients, it's heavy and it's hard. While it's very rewarding and fun, it's also difficult work. Yeah. I mean, you get to the really, really hard things. And so as clinicians, we've got to have ways to take care of ourselves. And because we're helpers, we tend to help everybody else in our sphere before we take care of ourselves. And that's a great quality. It's why we're good clinicians, but it also takes its toll on us.
Yes. So. Oh, absolutely. And if we don't pay attention or have it in the forefront, mm-hmm. it's so easy to just let it, so we get busy and it falls off the calendar and, you know, mm-hmm. we're not present about it and it's just a must.
Yeah. And I've learned that whenever I am teaching students that everyone can easily agree that we need to address our wellness. But when we talk about practically how to do that, that often that's more difficult. Like, is it a day at the spa? Because I can't do that today. You know, mm-hmm. is it a week at the beach? That would be lovely, but I can't do that today either. Mm-hmm. And so how do I take care of myself right now when I have 4 minutes until my next client, but the last client was really hard?
Yes. Yes. I love that. The micro moments, mm-hmm. you know, those like, cause that's usually what many of us have of, you know, if you have a jam packed schedule one day and a really, it's like, how do I do this in 4 minutes? Like mm-hmm. it's almost adds pressure unless you have something to keep you grounded or something to go to of like, oh, this is my thing I do in these moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And often just a little bit of thought beforehand to prepare yourself makes it a lot easier.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
but that might be a whole different podcast. I could talk forever on that.
Next time you're on, we'll do wellness. I love that topic. Yes. And creativity in it.
Yes. Well, you know, and that's my bias too. But I think that those of us that use creativity in our work, that we also can use a lot of that same stuff in our own wellness. You know, maybe, you know, we sketch in a journal because it kind of gets it out, but it doesn't require words. You know, we have those tools. I love to use a sand tray at the end of my day for my own stuff, where I put everything from all my clients, but also whatever's happening in my own life goes in the sand tray, and it's all mixed together. But that's a way for me to process it and then leave it at work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah. I'm getting really excited now. We're going to absolutely have to do another episode.
Let's do it.
Yes, yes. Future episode coming up. All right. Well, this has been so lovely, Denise. I can't thank you enough for just coming on and sharing all of your expertise. And just thank you for being here and sharing this with our listeners. Well, I am honored. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I can't recommend Denise's podcast, Play Therapy Across the Lifespan, enough. It's so well laid out and so so many tangible things I feel like I take away from those episodes. So definitely go take a listen to that. The link is in the show notes, as well as the wellness podcast that she also hosts. I'm really excited to dig into that and the future episode that we're going to have to do on that as well, which will be a blast. Wellness for us is also just so important, wellness in general. And as therapists, we do have to take care of ourselves, which is hard and oddly, I think, a lot of times not in our nature. But I'm speaking for myself in that way, but I think there's some other therapists that resonates with too. So self-care is so important, and I hope that listening to this fills your cup with self-care. If it gives you energy, whatever it does for you, I hope that it gets to fill your cup in some way when you do dive into these episodes. So again, always feel free to reach out and let us know if you have any feedback, questions, comments, anything you'd like to share, people that you want to suggest to be on, what you'd like to hear more of. I'm an open book and I love talking with listeners. And listeners, I hope you know that you get to have some control in what happens over here on the podcast, of what you want more of and who you'd love to hear from, and any feedback that you have. I really like to create things that are helpful and that people find useful, and that revolve around the topic of creativity, but feel free to reach out and let me know your thoughts. You can do that email kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com, or there is an anonymous survey in the show notes as well where you can do that too. So whatever way you would like to do that, I'm here to listen on the other side. Sending you lots of warm thoughts, maybe some cool thoughts as well. We're in summer, kicking it off. Hope that things are going well for you. Thank you so much for being a listener. If you do have a minute and can subscribe, rate, and review, that helps us so much. It helps us continue in creating free content and free information. So when you can do that, you're really giving back to us as well. So we can keep putting out this content. So if you get a minute and can do that, that would be wonderful. Otherwise, enjoy the rest of your morning, day, afternoon, evening, and of course, be creative.